This week's episode is sponsored by Civic Engagement Podcast Future Hindsight. We're back with an all-new season on systemic racism in the United States. Each week, they'll explore how the legacy of colonialism still permeates our country and how we can rectify it. Tune in this week to learn about America's disturbing history of child separation and removal, both from immigrants and U.S. citizens. Listen to Future Hindsight wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Wednesday, February 17th, 2021. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Cedar, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program, John Fetterman, candidate for U.S. Senate and current Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania, joins us to talk about his race today. Meanwhile, former President Donald Trump released a statement calling for new leadership in the Republican Party, calling Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell a dour, sullen, and unsmiling political hack, and attacking McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao, who used to serve in his administration despite McConnell's no vote on Trump's conviction. Yikes. Around 3 million Texans continue to face dangerous and deadly power outages, as authorities say they have no idea when power will be restored. With more ice storms coming, Republican officials continue to falsely blame green energy and not their own lack of preparedness, while the state is nearly 90% reliant on fossil fuels. President Biden held a town hall in Wisconsin last night where he signaled some resistance to watering down his $1.9 trillion stimulus proposal, while also rejecting Chuck Schumer and Senator Elizabeth Warren's proposal to cancel $50,000 in student debt. More on that later. Meanwhile, a White House spokesperson confirmed that the Biden administration is looking into using the mega corporation Amazon for vaccine distribution. Sounds like a bad idea. Speaking of Amazon, county officials in Alabama confirmed that Amazon changed traffic lights in order to thwart union canvassing with workers who were stopped at the light. Dystopian stuff. Fast food workers in 15 cities from St. Louis to Tampa to Chicago to Charleston went on strike yesterday, demanding a $15 minimum wage. The French National Assembly has passed an anti-separatist bill that ostensibly criminalizes acts of Muslim extremism, but is really an attempt to further marginalize Muslims in France, monitoring mosques, and for Emmanuel Macron to throw red meat to a right wing that could be congealing around Marine Le Pen, who is far right. And lastly, anti-coup protesters in Myanmar continue to flood the streets, breaking records with the sheer number of demonstrators in Yangon. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, everybody, to the show. We have a great show for you today. We started a little bit early because John Fetterman, a very promising candidate for the United States Senate, is going to be joining us at 12:15, and we want to accommodate that because I'm very excited about that interview. He's a true progressive and has a real shot in Pennsylvania. But firstly, we have to touch on the inordinate amount of propaganda coming out of the right wing when it comes to the power outages that we're seeing throughout the country, in Texas specifically. So Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, went on Fox News last night blaming green energy. He got the memo from Breitbart, from the Wall Street Journal, from Fox News, from all the right wing media that has decided to basically coordinate an attack on green energy that is entirely counterfactual, not connected to reality at all. He got that memo and regurgitated it last night, contradicting his own energy department on Sean Hannity's program.
Gas, oil, old-fashioned oil, and coal. I'm not against nuclear energy either. I'm not against wind turbines. But my question is, if they have these rolling blackouts and you got freezing weather, I mean, and they're not reliable, and it's use it or lose it, what good is it?
Sean, this shows how the Green New Deal would be a deadly deal for the United States of America. Texas is blessed with multiple sources of energy, such as natural gas and oil and nuclear, as well as solar and wind. But you saw from what Trace said, and that is our wind and our solar got shut down, and they were collectively more than 10% of our power grid. And that thrust Texas into a situation where it was lacking power in a...
We got to just cut in here. 87% of the loss was down to things like natural gas pipes freezing, right? 13% was because of renewables. 87% is because of fossil fuel stuff. So, I mean,
he says 10% there, but then continues to blame it purely on green energy. And then keep going. We'll break it down after.
A power grid, and that thrust Texas into a situation where it was lacking power in a statewide basis. That was power that was spread out by that ERCOT organization that you were talking about. As a result, it just shows that fossil fuel is necessary for the state of Texas as well as other states to make sure that we'll be able to heat our homes in the wintertime and cool our homes.
It actually shows the opposite, dude, because your own energy department, as I mentioned before the clip rolled, stated that the outages were primarily, overwhelmingly, because of frozen devices at natural gas and coal facilities and even nuclear facilities, not because of the 10% that you cite. I mean, he steps on his own point there by pointing out that it is a tenth of the energy that they produce. And part of the problem, too, is that ERCOT, which is Texas's power grid, it was set up to avoid federal regulation because the federal government has the ability to monitor and control in some ways and regulate interstate electrical grid. They have a jurisdiction over that, right? But because Texas just did it within their own state and it didn't cross state lines, they were able to kind of run rampant and do whatever they wanted with ERCOT. And so, what do you know? Without that federal regulation, it was entirely unprepared. And it doesn't even cover all of Texas, too. El Paso is on another grid, I believe. Some of East Texas is on another grid. So it's both inefficient, it's ineffective, and obviously what Greg Abbott is saying is a complete lie. Matt, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, it's a desperate lie for the industries that put, people into places like Texas legislatures. Here's just a bit more. ERCOT expected to get low capacity factors from wind and solar during winter peak demand. What it didn't expect is over 20 gigawatts of outages from thermal, mostly natural gas power plants. We went over this yesterday, but this is literally fracking infrastructure freezing in the pipes. Like, this is, they need to go on offense about this because, I mean, this stuff should come crumbling down by rights. The oil industry should be destroyed because of it's not serving us. And so they have to lie about this. And the biggest lie of my lifetime has been the lies about climate change, right? And this is just a continuation and a more desperate version of that.
Well, absolutely. And we're not just seeing it from politicians, as I mentioned. Tucker Carlson continues to blame wind energy on this, where Matt made this point to me before the show. Many of cold countries, Greenland, Iceland, Denmark, all of these nations that are a lot colder than Texas, they rely much more on wind energy, but they have solar.
Use wind turbines in Antarctica, for instance.
Yeah, wind turbines in Antarctica. They have wind turbines that unfreeze themselves. They have technology that, like, say you go on a plane on a cold day, right? They defreeze the plane. They do that, and helicopters have this technology too in Sweden, as Matt mentioned to me, that are able to unfreeze themselves. And so
the windmills. Yep.
The windmills. I'm sorry. Did I say
helicopters?
Helicopters. Yeah. Yep. So it's just all ignorance and performative attacking of the left. It's a way for them to go around in circles and attack the Green New Deal. But here's Tucker Carlson with his snide dismissal and continued propaganda effort.
So, unbeknownst to most people, the Green New Deal came to Texas. The power grid in the state became totally reliant on windmills. Then it got cold and the windmills broke, because that's what happens in the Green New Deal. You're without power. Millions are still without power tonight. Several have died. Now, the same energy policies that have wrecked Texas this week are going nationwide. They're coming to your state.
Okay. There are so many lies there, I don't even know what to say. Totally Reliant, 10%. Greg Abbott just said it. I don't know whose program comes on first. I think Tucker comes on after Sean Hannity. But if you watched beforehand, you would see that his own guest, the governor of Texas, said 10%. And all of the data, their own agencies are saying that, no, this is not the main cause of this.
Well, this is a good example of when Sam says that Tucker doesn't really believe what he's saying. Tucker doesn't really believe that the Green New Deal came to Texas already.
Yes, exactly. He doesn't. But again, I mean, what gets him off, sorry to give that, you know, to use that terminology, but what gets him, his buzz going in terms of the work that he does is basically hitting those cultural points that resonate with his audience. I mean, that's what he is. He's an emotional actor, or he occupies a space that allows his viewers to feel a certain emotion about things. And that's rage, and that's hate of change, and that's what he likes to spark in people. That's what fulfills him career-wise. And so,
yeah,
sort of intellectual.
Right. I mean, yeah, just to add to that, you know, propaganda is not about the facts or details, but it's about the attitudes created. So Tucker doesn't care about the details of, you know, if Texas actually has some sort of Texas. I mean, we don't really have time to get into it, but there's a Texas Tribune article about how much they've ceded to the market on things, and have the scarcity of energy is because it's good for certain people with money that like to trade these things.
And by the way, this has been happening over the weekend, this kind of propaganda effort, and it's going to continue, and cable news is still going to be talking about most of cable news, non-Fox, and the news in general kind of trying to squeeze every last drop out of the Trump era and QAnon and talk about that constantly. And then in a week, 40% of the country is going to believe that wind turbines, frozen wind turbines, and green energy cause this disaster that we're seeing in Texas. This deadly disaster where nearly 30 people have died that we know about already. People freezing to death in their homes. And they're going to think that's because of green energy. Because the media were so siloed, and also because the right-wing media, they did it quick. They got themselves together. And this is the effort that they're putting forth, and it's effective, unfortunately, for all of us. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by John Fetterman.
So, folks, I think you know that I've gotten a little bit obsessed with dental hygiene. I don't want to say obsessed, but I've gotten very, very conscientious about it in my older years, as I've gotten longer in the tooth, as it were. I think that's, you get what I'm saying there. What do? You brush, right? And you got to brush well. You floss. This is hugely important. And boy, do I have a great new flossing system, but I'll get to that in a second. Well, what about chewing gum? Yeah. Gum is completely underrated when it comes to better oral health. The ADA, the American Dental Association, recommends chewing sugar-free gum for 20 minutes after meals. Well, so what do I do to maintain this entire program of dental health? I turn to Quip. That's right. You know Quip. They make the very cool toothbrushes that are super convenient to use and electric, and so they clean your teeth well. And they also make what I happen to think is the greatest invention I have ever seen, which is the flosser. They make a non-disposable flosser. They have not had me read about that yet, but they sent it to me, and I'm sorry, I'm obsessed with it. Well, they also now have gum. Quip's new gum is actually good for your oral health, and it comes in a dispenser that is going to remind you of one of those Pez dispensers. Yes, it's awesome. It's like a Pez dispenser. I don't know how else to describe it. One press, the gum comes shooting out. It's awesome. My kids love it. They're into chewing gum. I only let them chew sugarless, of course. and this Pez dispenser drops out, makes it fun. Also, I can carry it in my pocket, and I don't have to worry about pulling the gum out and seeing that it's got all sorts of lint in it and stuff like that. Quip gum can help prevent cavities, and, of course, it freshens your breath. You chew it 20 minutes after eating. It's sugar-free, has tooth-friendly xylitol, has zero calories, and it has, I don't know, like a delicious mint flavor. This way, you can be extra hygienic. You're not creating any garbage. The quick release, what I call Pez style button, means you can share with your friends, but you don't have any wrappers. You don't have to touch them in any way. You pair Quip gum with their electric toothbrushes. They're amazing. I can't believe they haven't. I know I probably shouldn't even be saying this, but they have a refillable flosser that is just it is a complete marvel of science, as far as I'm concerned. They also deliver fresh brush heads and floss and toothpaste. Refills every 3 months, rather, for $5. Shipping's free, so you can save money and skip the store. Every single member of my family has a Quip now. My kids, they have a smaller head for the kids. Watermelon toothbrush that they send. My sisters, everybody. But I'm the only one with the flosser. But now they're all getting the gum, too. So if you get quip.com/majority report right now, or I should say if you go to quip.com/majority report right now, you get a free plastic dispenser with any refill plan. That's a free dispenser at getquip.com/majority. Spelled GETQUIP, getquip.com/majority. You get a free dispenser, and then you just have your gum delivered on a regular basis. Quip, it's the Good Habits Company. Now back to Emma.
Thanks so much, Sam. And I would like to welcome to the program John Fetterman, who is the Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania and has been since 2019 and is currently running for Senate. Pat Toomey is retiring and his seat will be available in 2022. How are you doing today, John?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm, you know, as a progressive, I'm excited about your candidacy, and it's great to talk to you today, especially given what's going on in Texas and throughout the country, and the fact that you've signed a no fossil fuel money pledge. So you're a great person to talk to about this. But I wanted to start off with a recent story about you and Governor Wolf and how you both decided to grant clemency to 13 people serving life in prison, including two men who committed a carjacking in 1980. The woman died of a heart attack. Can you talk about that decision, why that's been so central to your tenure, and those kinds of moves as Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, great question. This was centered around two brothers that from Philadelphia who made a really bad choice one day in 1980 to carjack somebody. He was an older gentleman, and they approached him with a non-functional weapon and said, "We want your car." And they got in the car with him, and he began to develop some heart pains. And they said, "Well, take your medicine. You know, we don't want the." And they dropped him off at a payphone. And then subsequently later, he died of a heart attack. So without a doubt, those men have culpability. They should not have done that. But at the end of the day, they were offered a plea deal of 10 years if they plead to it. And their lawyer said, "Well, we can get a better deal. This isn't right." So they ended up getting convicted of second degree murder. And they have spent 40 years in prison, and they were going to die in prison, but for my intervention to get them before to the governor's desk. And what's also remarkable about this story, too, is the victim's daughter said that if you don't let these men out, my family will never be able to heal. You know, my family doesn't want this. You know, these two men do not deserve to die in prison. They shouldn't have done what they did, but they had no point wanted to harm her father, and they recognize that. And it's so amazing when you look at 84% of the people serving life without parole in Philadelphia are Black. And, you know, these two brothers and others, there were many other on that list in that same situation. And the governor and I got them out. And that is the core philosophy for me, is the believing in second chances and redemption, and how we need to put a lot of the wrong injustices, like second degree murder, in Pennsylvania, and we need to fix them.
Right. I mean, I think that's an amazing story. And would you bring that kind of philosophy to your Senate campaign? How would you communicate that statewide and make it clear to your constituents why this is a just cause?
Sure. Very much so. I mean, let me be clear. Like, I'm the first lieutenant governor in the history of Pennsylvania that's completely reimagined and revolutionized the pardons and commutation process here in Pennsylvania, because we want to make sure that we're getting the justice part right. If we could, you know, get rid of second degree murder, whereas you have somebody who was sitting in a getaway car serving the same effective sentence of dying in prison as the Tree of Life shooter, why wouldn't we want to do that? You know, we need to remember that people age out of crime. You know, we are in the forgiveness business with respects to commutations. We are not in the perpetual punishment business. And my commitment to criminal justice reform is stronger than anyone else's in that could get into this race, because I've actually been doing it. And the work that the governor and I have done in these last several years has helped revolutionize the idea of a second chance here in Pennsylvania.
That's great. I think obviously Trump got a lot of headlines for granting clemency to people, but did nothing substantive on the issue. And it would be great to have another voice in the Senate who was pushing for that. So I wanted to turn to what's happening more concentratedly, I guess, in Texas right now, with the extreme weather that we're seeing, which scientists have said it's a result of climate change. As the Arctic heats, you're going to have a frequency in the intensity as well of storms like this. You've signed a no fossil fuel money pledge. I wanted to open up that broadly. What is your take on what's happening in Texas? And then also just the fact that the right wing has seemingly coalesced behind a propaganda narrative about how this is the result of green energy, which is completely disconnected from facts. So what are your thoughts on what's happening nationally right now?
Sure. Well, it wasn't long ago before Texas was mocking and pointing at California and like, look at their, you know, look at the troubles they're having with their power grid. And, you know, like, cue the massive failure of Texas's own power grid. I mean, they have their own power grid in Texas. So this is completely a homegrown situation in Texas. And the truth is, to your point, is divorced from reality. You know, all the energy sources are down. It's not just green. The petroleum and natural gas have been frozen out, too. So let's be very clear about that. This is a crisis of infrastructure. This speaks perfectly to the idea that we need to invest trillions in revolutionizing green energy, our infrastructure, and make sure that it's done, that is, it preserves the sanctity of the union way of life. Think of all the union jobs for men and women that kind of a project of that kind of scope will create. And I'm not surprised that the Republicans are using this as an opportunity to bash green energy. I mean, you know, especially in Texas. I mean, look at how honest they were about voter fraud in this last election.
So
this is an enormous opportunity and a wake-up call. One, climate change is real and it must be acted on rapidly, that we need to invest trillions in revamping our infrastructure with respects to our power grid. And two, me signing this pledge is consistent with the person I've always been. I signed this in every race where it was an available option to do. And I want to be clear, I have never, ever, nor will I ever take a single dime from the industry.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I accidentally muted myself. You're running on small dollars, correct?
Correct. Our average campaign contribution, we've raised, we're approaching $2.2 million in a little about 5 weeks, and it's 100% grass powered. Over 70,000 individual donors with an average donation of under $30, you know, and I'm so proud of that fact, because there's not a lot of $2,800 checks in there, because it speaks to the strength of the message, and it speaks to the strength of the movement, and it speaks to the integrity of which this election is going. Because, you know, I can't think of anything more democratic than saying, hey, John, here's $25 because I believe in what you're running on. And that's, I wouldn't want it any other way.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you can credit the Bernie Sanders campaign for kind of normalizing that kind of campaign donation. You endorsed him in 2016. Speaking of this 2020 race that just happened, you know, Joe Biden angered a lot of people on the left by refusing to ban fracking, and he continues to do so, not just on the campaign trail. It wasn't just a campaign slogan. He seems to be committed to that as president. Many people speculated that that was an effort to win over Pennsylvania. How does that square with your commitment not to take fossil fuel money and your belief that we should be kind of moving towards a massive amount of green energy infrastructure?
Great question. You know, first of all, fracking, especially when it's done recklessly the way it can be, it is incredibly destructive to the environment. And that's one of the many reasons why I've never taken a dime from that industry, because no one can say, well, it's because he's bought and paid for by an industry. And that's just not true. The position here in Pennsylvania is more nuanced than that, where it's like right now we have to acknowledge that we must transition away from these fossil fuels, and we must embrace green energy on a more sustained level. But we also must recognize that we have to honor and safeguard the union way of life for these workers that are currently here in Pennsylvania, and also the transition for those workers into these new sectors and new technologies, where it can't be perceived as, well, good luck, you know, learn how to code, you know, put in a resume at Google. That's just not true or what's fair. So the reality on the ground is more nuanced than that. And Joe Biden understood that. But at the end of the day, Joe Biden carried Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania fundamentally believes that he will do the right thing, and he will make the tough decisions when it's appropriate, but he'll also split the difference and navigate a path that is also more nuanced than principled.
Yes, I understand that. You've mentioned union way of life a few times, and I read on your campaign website that you've cited that as well. Can you talk about more specifically how you would bolster unions if you were to win the race in 2022?
You know, as a progressive, you know, think about, unions are one of the most progressive inventions in the history of modern times. It's so simple, but it's so revolutionary to this idea that workers have rights, that workers deserve to share in the wealth that their work creates. I mean, that's revolutionary, because now you could take it for granted. But back then, especially where I live, that wasn't a given. Men and women died to achieve that. So let's be clear about that. And I will never understand, whoever they are, why you would seek to destroy, diminish, or eliminate the union way of life. I mean, it singularly built our middle class. And, you know, no one seems to care about how rich billionaires get or what the CEO pay is. But we bristle when we talk about a living wage, or we talk about union rights and union protections. Yeah, I'll never understand it. And whenever there is a vote, whenever that would come up, whether it's stand with the union way of life or against it, there's no choice. I would always stand with the union way of life, just like we do in Pennsylvania. The governor and I are the first and second line of defense, because the Republicans were eager to take Pennsylvania right to work. And they're going to have to pry the pen out of my finger, because it's never going to happen so long as the governor and I are on that watch.
So, yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that dynamic. The Republican Party in your state, people might say it's extreme relative to the fact that, you know, Pennsylvania can go either way in a presidential race. But to me, it's just emblematic of what the Republican Party's become nationally. I mean, they have obstructed the Democrats, and the fact that, you know, you have a Democratic lieutenant governor, Democratic governor. And it's been a struggle ever since, really, the schism erupted. But also it was highlighted more nationally in the presidential election. Can you talk about the challenges you face with the Republican Party controlling the legislature in Pennsylvania?
Yeah. Well, they've controlled it through a gerrymandering process that they instituted back in 2010. So it created a disproportionate advantage in that respect. But the where they are now is they are the party of obstruction and lies. And this last cycle was never more true. These same people, whether it's our congressional delegation or whether it's the state senators and state reps, were all claiming that, most of them were claiming that it was rigged. This is crazy. Not my race. I was on the same ballot as Joe Biden, but the voters love me, but Joe Biden, it was rigged. It's just absurd and logically bankrupt. In fact, you know, a couple of them were even at the Capitol Hill riots on January 6th. One of the most vocal ones, in fact, Doug Mastriano. So this, it really comes down to this fundamental truth that Republicans will gerrymander, Republicans will alter the Constitution, Republicans will lie and spread misinformation when the votes don't go their way. And that's what they're attempting to do by gerrymandering our state Supreme Court, which they had no problem with until we won in 2015. And now all of a sudden they're activist judges, and it's an outrage that more of them don't live in different parts of the state. So they are shameless, and it's tragic because, you know, gerrymandering is fundamentally anti-democratic. And that, by that, I mean to the American way of governance, the true will of the people. And the Republicans are democracy for me, but not for thee.
Two more questions. I wanted to ask you to expand on your stance on healthcare, because I know you've been supportive of Medicare for All in the past. You talk about how healthcare is a human right on your campaign platform. What is your stance on healthcare? Are you supportive of universal health?
Yeah. Thank you. That's a great question. It really comes down to, it's a fundamental human right. I challenge anybody to say that you are not going to need healthcare at some point in your life. I mean, it's no different than food or shelter or education. It's something that any civilized, certainly affluent society as ours should not recognize that. Now, what that looks like, you know, if there is a vote, I want to be clear, if there is a vote that would generate and create Medicare for All, I'm going to make that vote. If there is a vote to achieve it through another mechanism, you know, whatever way we can inculcate that into the fabric of our society, I'm here for. You know, it I've always been outraged that the men and women that are making these laws and these decisions have government funded healthcare, and they seem to enjoy it. So to vote against the interests of healthcare for every American seems not only hypocritical, but deeply un-American and unfair. So that, you know, I am here to stand with the truth that healthcare is a fundamental human right.
Thank you. And lastly, because I know you have to go, I saw you referred to as a populist. And I think, you know, the right wing and Donald Trump have kind of thwarted that word, and it can be very broad. I don't even know if the right wing can be populist. That's my view. But I can see how somebody might refer to you as a populist. Do you embrace that label? What does that mean to you? What does that mean to you in your tenure as lieutenant governor? And what would it mean to you as senator if you were to win?
Sure. Yeah, it's funny the way the Republicans try to say populist, the guy that sits on a solid gold toilet and spent, you know, tens of millions of dollars golfing at a country club. Only the Republicans could spin that narrative. But the truth is, like, I don't really focus on labels. You know, I focus on universal truths, like we spoke, that a living wage, like healthcare, is a basic right, that marginalized communities and places need investment and they deserve to be uplifted. I believe that LGBTQIA rights are fundamental. I mean, this idea that they don't deserve equal protection under the law is deeply un-American. Immigration, my wife's immigration story, you know, we need a compassionate immigration protocol that acknowledges that immigration makes America, America, and ending this war on drugs, you know, legalizing marijuana as a party. Like, when South Dakota is to the right of our party, you know, the Democrats, you know, we need to just say, hey, maybe we need to be a little more proactive on these things. So there isn't one area where it might be labeled progressive or populist. But to me, these are the truths that I've been championing, the people, policies, and places for the last 20 years that I've been in Braddock.
Thank you so much, John Fetterman, Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania and candidate for United States Senate in 2022. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much for our time.
Thank you. All right, folks. Sound like Sam?
We're gonna Great job, Emma.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll see you in a sec.
Sorry, my fault.
It's okay. I don't know. I didn't tee you up for that.
My computer is freezing, so I might just do the music.
All right. Well,
all right, we're back.
So what people don't realize, it's just me and Matt this week. Brendan is away as well. We're on vacation.
Brendan's getting his own much-needed vacation.
Yes, Brendan, you know, he deserves it. And so we're a little bare bones here, but I thought that was great. Really interesting candidate. So obviously, if you guys want to check more of him out, if you live in Pennsylvania, you can go to his website, all of that. So let's dive into this Biden town hall, shall we?
You know, I got to say, there's some breaking news while the interview was going on. We had a passing of one Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh passed away.
And Sam's not here?
And Sam's not here. That was the very first thought I had, too. Like, what a week for Rush Limbaugh to go out when Sam is absent.
My goodness.
I thought, yeah, do you have a
backdrop? I'll give him a shofar.
I thought maybe, you know, we obviously don't want to go too deep into it without Sam, but... I put a request out to Twitter for, you know, the clips to play upon his passing just to remember what kind of guy this was. And I think this is a good one. So this is him talking about Michael J. Fox, who I should note has Parkinson's or had Parkinson's.
In this commercial, he is exaggerating the effects of the disease. He is moving all around and shaking, and it's purely an act. This is the only time I have ever seen Michael J. Fox portray any of the symptoms of the disease he has. He can control himself enough to stay in the frame of the picture, and he can control himself enough to keep his eyes right on the lens, the teleprompter. But his head and shoulders are moving all over the place. So this is really shameless, folks. This is really shameless of Michael J. Fox.
Indeed. Now...
very shameless to exhibit the symptoms of the disease that you have.
Yeah, a person who is not acting is Rush Limbaugh, who is actually dead. He's not acting about that. And I will just say, as somebody who had extended family who got their brain poisoned by this freak, he will not be missed. And thank God that he's off the airwaves, misleading people into just hate and bigotry and what a disgusting person. Like, yeah. If somebody, like, I am somebody who believes very much in free speech. I think the way that the right wing and money in general and reactionary money has bastardized it in basically our lifetimes to create like Limbaugh and Fox News, basically jeopardizing the all those ideals people should hope to care. I think good riddance on Rush Limbaugh being gone.
Well, look, I mean, we're not going to lionize Rush Limbaugh, and I'm sure he has family and friends that miss him, but this is the guy that peddled birther conspiracies nonstop, was instrumental in that gaining mainstream, coined the term feminazi, which was... I think toxic to feminist discourse for like 5 years or so. I would hear that all the time. I mean, he was wrong on everything. Climate change. He was pro Iraq war. He has not just towed the Republican Party line for his entire life. He has actively spread misinformation and conspiracy theories. He was Alex Jones before Alex Jones even came about. And he had a way bigger platform because he was syndicated on talk radio. So, like, let's not pretend he isn't what he was. He was a monster, as Matt said. So perhaps he did not deserve that shofar, right?
I mean, I think we can all agree it was an ironic shofar. And, I mean, I think just the game now is to see who tries to rehabilitate him.
Rush Limbaugh going to hell.
Yeah, I would watch that video.
Dropped right. through the doors. Sorry.
Bad news for certain pharmaceutical salespeople in the Dominican Republic, though. So
yes, but other drug addicts, not him. Other drug addicts are bad people and deserve to be in prison, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yikes. All right. Well, glad we didn't hold back. but it is truly tragic that that Rush Limbaugh has passed and Sam is no longer here for it.
Exactly.
Not here for it. But yeah, let's get into that Biden town hall because there is a lot to cover, I would say. We good?
Cool.
Okay. So Joe Biden had a town hall in Wisconsin last night. He is hitting the road I don't even know why hit the road for this, but I guess you got to do that stuff as president. We're in the middle of a pandemic, but I digress. I don't know how much of a difference it makes, but Wisconsin, important to Democrats. He went there to kind of tout his $1.9 trillion stimulus bill, shied away from saying, I'm not going to accept anything less, but I wouldn't expect that from Biden. There were some good moments in the fact that he said we need to go bigger, but there were some bad moments as well. Let's get into the good and let's get into the bad. Here he is on CNN telling Anderson Cooper that everybody agrees we need to go big on stimulus.
Committed to passing $1.9 trillion bill, or is that final number still up for negotiation?
I'm committed to pass. Look, here's some of you probably economists or college professors or you teach it in school. This is the first time in my career, and as you can tell, I'm over 30, the first time in my career that there is a consensus among economists left, right, and center that is over, and including the IMF and in Europe, that the overwhelming consensus is in order to grow the economy a year, two, three, and four down the line, we can't spend too much. Now's the time we should be spending. Now's the time to go big. You may recall I managed the last experiment we had with a stimulus, and it was $800 billion. We thought we needed more than that, and we think we did. It ended up working, but it slowed things up by about, and depending who you talk to, between 6 months and a year and a half. We can come back. We can come roaring.
I mean, that is he's about to say we can come roaring back in a few years. That is a shocking admission there from Biden, where he's not going to all out say that the stimulus package that was passed during the recession when he and Obama came into office was too small. But he is sort of saying it there. I mean, he's acknowledging that they kind of learned from their mistakes here. And when he said,
it was good enough, but it could have been like, that's him covering for that, not saying that explicitly.
Right. He has to hedge because obviously you can't criticize Obama in the Democratic Party. It's basically sacrilege. So, he also doesn't want to tarnish his own involvement in that. So, okay, I'm fine with that kind of hedging. But the core of it is that he's saying everyone agrees we need to go big. And, My frustration is that he needs to go by the consensus every single time. Like back then, people were saying we need to go small. We were listening to Larry Summers, and now everybody else is saying from left, center, right, that we need to go big on stimulus. And so that's the area that I'm going to go down. That's the path I'm going to go. I don't think that's leadership. I think you make determinations based on the information that you see, not based on consensus,
Yeah, I like the idea that like all these institutions that were wrong last time that they think that we can do more this time. It's like, well, maybe add a few more. Don't like name check the IMF, maybe.
Right. Exactly. He's still going back to the well, but fortunately, the well is no longer poisoned. And fortunately, Larry Summers, the maggot at the bottom of the well, isn't the one calling the shots here. There seems to be a significant rebuttal of his kind of thinking, and that goes to show that Biden is a part of that, and he's not buying the same nonsense. And part of this, though, if we can't give them too much credit, is just self-preservation, right? Because they went small on stimulus during the Obama years, and they got their asses kicked for the next six by the Republican Party and the Tea Party wave. So it's not fully an altruistic and an intellectual exercise where they're weighing the way that the stimulus affected the economy and affected human beings. They're also looking out for themselves. That was part of why Biden and the Democrats in Georgia push forward the stimulus checks. Not that I don't think Biden ideologically fully agrees with it, but, you know, who knows? So I'm nitpicking there because I'm so frustrated by the next clip that it's poisoned the well of my perspective on this town hall, I guess. So that was good. This goes to show maybe Manchin has cooled a little bit on his bizarre insistence that the income threshold should be lowered, leaving 40 million fewer people without checks. So 40 million people would have gotten checks under Trump, but not under Biden. Great electoral strategy there. Part of the self-preservation that I'm talking about here. But the infuriating part is that Biden could be helping even more people by the stroke of a pen, young people specifically, also often immigrants who are preyed upon by for-profit colleges that completely exploit them and milk them of their money and give them zero opportunities. He's not really going to do that to any significant extent, he revealed last night at the town hall.
My oldest son graduated after undergraduate and graduate school with $136,000 in debt after working 30 hours a week during school. My other son went to Georgetown and Yale Law School, graduated $142,000 in debt, and he worked for the parking service down in Washington. My daughter went to Tulane University and then got a master's at Penn. She graduated $103,000 in debt. So I don't think anybody should have to pay for that, but I do think you should be able to work it off. My daughter's a social worker. My other son ran the World Food Program USA, and so on. They didn't qualify. But my point is, I understand.
Why didn't they qualify? If his daughter was just a social worker, I'm sorry, they have other wealth. Like, I don't even necessarily know. I am not trying to cast aspersions on his story here and his kid's experience. But yes, he may have said pay your own way through college. That may have been his kind of old school mentality. But the fact of the matter is his family has immense access to resources. Not the average family that's experiencing student debt, the average kid, is not in the same stratosphere as what Joe Biden's kids are experiencing, but continue.
And so on. They didn't qualify. But my point is, I understand the impact of the debt, and it can be debilitating. And I think there's a whole question about what universities are doing. They don't need more skyboxes. What they need is more money invested in making. So that's why I provide, for example, $70 billion over 10 years for HBCUs and other minority serving universities, because they don't have the laboratories to be able to bring in those government contracts that can train people in cybersecurity or other future endeavors that pay well. But I do think that in this moment of economic pain and strain, that we should be eliminating interest on the debts that are accumulated, number one. And number two, I'm prepared to write off the $10,000 debt, but not 50.
Mr. President, let me ask you,
because I don't think I have the authority to do it by sign of the pen.
That is total BS.
Yeah.
How do you think you have the authority by executive order to write off $10,000 but not $50,000? Where in the Constitution does that say, is that written? Where is that written? He's banking on people's ignorance about the issue. So this is what he's trying to do. He's threading this needle as like an old school debt obsessed Democrat. This is what he made his bread and butter on. By the way, if students, if they had other protections, right, maybe this would be okay. Like the ability to not go bankrupt on these. oh, wait, you got rid of that stuff. So, I mean, like, this is completely arbitrary. He's trying to make it seem like $50,000, that can only come through the House and the Senate, which it's not going to, because it's not going to be able to pass through the filibuster. So he just wants to do a little bit by executive order, if he even does that at all, the $10,000 elimination.
It's Ken Klippenstein.
Nonsensical. Go on.
Ken Klippenstein had the you know, all that you need to say. Somewhere between 10K and 50K, it becomes illegal. And Biden's like, I think, like, yeah, this is just a lie, right? And it's the same thing with when Saki, I don't know how to pronounce the name yet, said that, oh, we want to do 10K, but we want it to come, we want Congress to take the lead, which completely obscures the fact that Congress, and Schumer particularly, called for $50,000. So if you're going to take Congress's lead, which I need, you pointed out why it's not really going to come out of it, it's just dishonesty to cover up, you know, broken promises, or I don't know, not wanting, I don't know. They want to, I guess, let Schumer freelance because of his primary coming up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Schumer's making that determination. I think he's not going to fight Biden too hard on it. And they know that. I think you're going to have some call outs by Ocasio-Cortez on Twitter, like we saw last night. And that's about it. And the Biden camp's okay with that. And, you know, in the middle of this pandemic, I don't necessarily think in terms of like a political cost calculation that he's wrong, but it is wrong morally. It is an immoral position. And it's like this arbitrary desire by conservative Democrats like Biden to put restraints on oneself in order to appease some fiction of a moderate voter. I mean, most voters would be absolutely thrilled by the student debt. I mean, you're going to have old school people like saying, oh, well, I didn't have my debt eliminated, all of that. But like, no one's making their voting determinations on that.
Yeah. And I just think, I mean, he's a guy that's so internalized the purpose of these loans, which is to make people like labor stay coerced. So like, he brags about his kids working 30 hours through college. And like, I'm sorry, I know semesters that I like worked and didn't work. And like, when I came to NYU, I took out a massive amount of loans where I didn't have to work during the summer. I learned the most because I didn't have to go also work 30 hours a week somewhere for like parking cars or whatever he said his kid was doing. And that is ideologically a bipartisan thing that we need to keep people, especially these young people, we need them locked in. We need a promise on their labor. So either they'll have to go work in the high income field for some capitalist, or we'll do some public service thing. But those requirements are super onerous. This is all about control, right? It's entirely about control. And Biden wants that control to remain.
Yeah. And it's control under the guise of reasonability and legal hurdles, as if he just canceled it tomorrow. Say a Republican wins next time around, they're going to be like, we're reinstating those thousands of dollars of student loans that people... And guys, the government makes money off this, too. That's also what's so sick about it.
They're the main profiter.
Yeah, the federal government is the number one, as Matt said, profiter off of student loan debt. And when he also, I'm not finishing my points, but I meant to make this point. I have so much to say about this. He said that we're eliminating interest. No, like, they're pausing interest right now. It's going to come back once the pandemic is over, and then the government will keep making money on it. Like, he just wants to put the plug in for a little bit on the cash flow to the federal government, and then take it out once things kind of calm down a little bit. I mean, that's what that is, too. And it's really gross in my view.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, do we have another clip we want to get to? Because we started a little early. Then we'll head into the fun half.
Well, we want to save the defund one for Jamie. Do you want to play this? Let's see. We have this. Seven. Yeah, seven.
So this is relevant, too, because he addresses executive actions look at this through the context of what we just talked about with student debt.
Shoot, wait a second. I linked myself to the wrong one, but I think I can find it real quick.
No. Guys, don't. Look, it's just the two of us this week. You're going to have to bear with it. And honestly, it's more fun for you, right? You get to see a little bit into the window of our jobs.
Bobby. You know what? I think we might have to can that one because the thread got messed up somehow and I can't find it.
All right. So. Then we'll just head into the fun half now and then we'll take your calls for a little bit. Sound good, Matt?
Yeah, it sounds great. All right. Jamie will be joining us too.
Yeah. Let me say too, check out the Antifada, Jamie's show, check out Left Reckoning, and everything that Matt is doing. You want to plug some of that stuff?
Yeah, I'll plug that. Maybe Jamie can, if she can hear this, she can join now. Left Reckoning, Grace Blakely and David Griscom had a big long chat yesterday that we'll be playing for everybody tomorrow night. Very excited, talking about sort of the financialization of the global economy and how that is playing out with COVID and what kind of world we're going to be left with after all of this is done. I've listened to only about half of it, but so far, but it is one of our, a feather in a cap for Left Reckoning. We're very happy to get Grace on. So people will want to check that out. And patreon.com/Left Reckoning, because it's substantial enough where we might hold some back for patrons. I'm not sure. So if you want to get on that, patreon.com/Left Reckoning. And I think we can go. Oh, here's Jamie. She can, she will join us now and she can give us plugs for the Antifada. Hello, Jamie.
Hey guys, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Now
we can hear you. There you go.
Wonderful. So this week on the Antifada, Sean and I spoke with Marcus and Lorax from Left Flank Vets, talking a little bit about their experiences in the military, openings for revolutionary organizing in the U.S. Armed Forces. They gave us a bit of a prognosis on foreign policy under Joe Biden. Spoiler alert, not great. And some more stuff that I can't remember right now, but it was all very good. And you should check it out, patreon.com/theantifada. Also, tonight at 7 p.m., twitch.tv/theantifada. We have our weekly main show, Forever's Gonna Start Tonight. Which, we've appropriated the Bonnie Tyler song because we decided it's about abolishing capitalist time. So that's always a lot of fun. 7 o'clock.
To be honest with you.
What?
It's a great song.
Oh, yes. Well, it gets even greater when you realize that it's for comrades.
Right. Exactly. That was her initial intent.
Mm-hmm. And we have a vaporwave version of it that we play. It's a lot of fun. Also tomorrow, I am launching Antifada Ladies Night, featuring the ladies of a very fun podcast called Beef Country, and we're going to be talking about Britney Spears. So check that out.
You watch that doc?
Yeah, I did.
What'd you think?
Oh my God, free Britney! That's all I got to say about that. I mean, it's fun to talk about. It's like trashy pop culture, but it's also serious. Like,
it's really like an indictment of like society's politics of control, or like the core system of control, misogyny. I remember like thinking about how we treated her as a society and feeling like it was wrong, and then just reliving that. I mean, mm-hmm. That was, we all should be ashamed participating in it, even tacitly.
Yeah, dude, the stuff that people thought it was okay to say to her and to ask her is just...
Are you a virgin over and over again?
Stunning. Like, literally leave Britney alone. It's also about disability rights because, a lot of people didn't know how few rights people have under a conservatorship and how hard it is to get out of it.
And lastly, too, just about the last thing about the Free Britney doc is I wish there was more of a class analysis because there clearly was like a white trash.
Oh yeah.
Kind of the element that allowed the media to treat her in the way that they did and destroy her. She was, yeah. but she'll be back. I got faith.
Oh, she's an angel. She deserves so much better than she's gotten.
Agreed. All right. And I'll check out the Noma Key Show. twitch.tv/the_NomaKey_show. I'm not even reading from anything. I just remembered Sam's stilted cadence so well in my mind every time I plug it that I'm able to do it from memory. Oh. All right, guys, let's head into the fun half. See you there.
Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
That's some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh.
Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands
up.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.